This episode of The Payload is brought to you in partnership with Lenovo Gaming and Intel. You can find out more about Lenovo Gaming on Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook at Lenovo Gaming or visit lenovogaming.com.
Podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 50. That's right, we made it half a millennial, centennial, millennial, 50 years of weeks of podcasting on The Payload. Welcome, hello, we are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. Today is December 22nd, I almost went European time, the 22nd of December 2016 from Denver, Colorado. I'm John Horseman. With me is the crew. First, from Camarillo, California, it's Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, it's really good to be on episode 50. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we have done 50 of these episodes. It's been really fun so far, and I look forward to 50 more with you, John.
I hope so. Just without Kevin, the next one. Kevin, it's your last show. Oh, from Saskatoon, Canada, soon to be somewhere else, it's Kevin Obdestead. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. Yeah, it's official now. There's no more secrets, nothing left to hide. So today, episode 50, my last show. It's gonna be kind of weird. I feel like I'm gonna be sitting here next week ready to go, and you're not gonna call me, and I'm just gonna, you know, single tear shed it. But so for those of you who don't know already, whether you don't follow me on Twitter or haven't seen the news or heard the news elsewhere,
correct. That is me, by the way. I don't follow you on Twitter
anymore. For John and everybody else, yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm leaving the Payload, BlizzPro, WellMet, all of those things. Clapping is already started. I'm going to work for Blizzard.
That's the big one.
Yay!
You get the really long one, and I'm not even going to long applause. I need to specify applause.
Good save.
Long applause. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. I'll be working as an associate editor on the esports communications team starting sometime in early 2017. Exact details TBD, but so I'm done everything here in the next like week. No more podcasts, no more freelance work. Had to resign from my job, got to start getting ready to move. And gonna go work for Blizzard. So I'll be around, just not on the show.
We might let you sit in on a Skype call still. You can just sit there and reminisce about what could have been, you know.
Listen along quietly, yeah.
Well, man, seriously and genuinely, congratulations. Much deserved. Every time I need to write anything from resumes to articles to marketing decks, the first person I give it to be like, proofread this and tell me everything I did wrong is Kevin Obdestead. So much earned. Very excited to see what you do at Blizzard. And hopefully you do not stay too much of a stranger, and we still hang out and play Overwatch and race to legend and Hearthstone together and all those wonderful things that we've done over the years, year and a half.
Yeah, if anything, I'll have more time to do those things. Won't be tied up working on podcasts. So
that's true. Ugh, so much more work for me to do now, though. That's the thing. That's how they get you. Well, all right. Well, it's a bittersweet episode. We've hit 50. We're losing a co-host. Rosh couldn't be here. She's in the process of moving, and so like her power is weird and everything. So I'm really bummed that she couldn't be here for the show. She's still gonna try to crash the post show while we play some Maze Snowball Offensive so we can pelt Kevin with snowballs here one last time before we are pelting a Blizzard employee with snowballs instead. So let's go ahead and talk about our weeks in the world of Overwatch. Jimmy, what have you been up to this week?
Well, get the applause button ready because I finally did my placement matches for a competitor. Yay. Yeah. And then get the boo sound because it's I hit 1385 rating.
Wow.
So
wow.
Yeah. So to put that
savage
in,
golf clapping.
I know how you feel about that. It's not, that's not me. You told me you have the boo ready. I'm not gonna boo you. We're gonna golf clap you. Because I know you're not happy with that.
No, I'm not happy at all with this. I went 5-5, and to put this in perspective, I started out at 2135 last season and ended at 1804, so roughly 500 rating drop going 5-5. Okay.
Well,
I just have work to do, but I mean the games were really fun. They're really close, and I was most successful on D.Va. Holy crap, she is strong right now.
D.Va's good, man. And a good D.Va can really dictate the pace of the match. A good D.Va on a team, mm-hmm. even though you don't see them in gold, you know, eliminations or gold damage, they're just such a difference maker when it comes to playing Overwatch right now. She's just so strong. So that's good. You're getting to know a good hero and you're going to climb up. No problem. I had the same thing happen where I placed about 300, 400 points lower than I finished last season. And I'm already up to almost diamond. So I'm really close. I just need to stop playing with my brother who's dragging me down. I mean,
wow.
You're doing great, bud. You just sit on that Lucio, bro. That sounds awesome. Kev, how was your week in Overwatch and elsewhere?
It was okay. I had a little bit of time. I have to say, I got super tilted. I started working on my placements on PC, and I had levers in my first two games. And I was just going to grind through them and see how I did. And then, and because I wanted to be able to compare notes with how everybody else did. But man, I was just so mad after, like, because you get in, you play in like a pretty good game. My first one was on, what the heck map were we on? Volskaya, I think, was my very first one. And like, you start out, you're on, defense. The first hold is pretty good. Second hold, not as good, but like, we're able to kind of keep it together. And they get it with like just before overtime is supposed to start. So you feel like, okay, we're pretty evenly matched. This is good. And then we switch to offense and just get destroyed because one of our guys is like, well, it's over, and just leaves. And now we're 5v6 for the rest of the match. And we're like, well, now it doesn't matter. Like, we're not going to have a good time here. And he was in just long enough that it counted, right? So it wasn't like it stopped being a lobby that counted. I'm surprised this is still a thing. Like, I really thought that people leaving would stop being a thing this deep into competitive. Like, I mean, I guess there's just got to be people who are getting the game new as like Christmas gifts and stuff is my only theory, because obviously it's that time of year. But man, I'm not done my placements. I have a few left to go because I was I was super mad and I couldn't do it.
You have to think,
I was on the other side.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was on the other side of that coin last night playing my placements, and someone on the other team, after we had gotten 3 points on Gibraltar, they dropped out just like immediately. And I felt bad for the other team. I just messaged him in all chat. I'm like, that, I'm so sorry. That sucks. And obviously we easily defended 6v5, and that was really frustrating. The other thing about my placements, I was a little surprised at the repetition on maps I got. I mean, it's just law of averages. In a random map pool, you're going to get a lot of the same thing sometimes. But I had like 3 games on Nepal, 2 games on Numbani, and just I didn't get to see every map. So it was interesting how it ended up that way.
Kind of a weird one. Hey, sorry, John, I didn't want to cut you off.
I wanted to say, I'm going to make a sweeping declaration here and say that Leavers matches does not affect your MMR that much. I'm going to say.
Oh, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's just a super frustrating experience, right? I don't think it had a meaningful impact on my matchmaking rating. I was just really annoyed because you can't even actually, like, I was playing well, I thought, and the games felt quite balanced. So I was reasonably impressed with the matchmaking quality, right. But then it just falls apart. And like, I have to stay and finish the game, right, to not get the lever penalties myself. And it's like, well, now I'm frustrated that I had to sit through this match that was unwinnable, right? Like, it's not a great experience. But I'm actually interested in Jimmy's point about the map repetition thing, because it does seem odd to me that we don't have any control whatsoever over what maps we play on. And yeah, it's like, I'm sure that statistically, if I go look at my profile, I've probably played the maps more or less equally, but all it takes is like a slight variance away from like a perfect cycle. And there's definitely going to be maps that you've played way less of, maps that you've played way more of, like discounting the stuff that's come out since release, like Eichenwald or whatever, right? I bet you I've played way more Watchpoint Gibraltar than I have other maps that I know I've played less games of. I've played way less Hollywood. It's interesting because it's one of the things, you know, that we've talked about for pro players and what they want to be able to choose for maps. But we still have no influence ourselves over what maps we play on when we sit down to play competitive.
And it's almost like that's pretty intentional, especially with the latest stance with MLG Vegas and IEM Jiyongi. Got it. Okay.
You got it.
I'll get it. Eventually, every time I just soften that G a little bit, man. That's just the worst. Anyways, that is likely, that's a Blizzard stance now until the community is up and gets that change. I still don't know if we'd ever see that change in Overwatch. Just because, like...
Yeah. I think they just want, Blizzard just wants to be able to get you into a game and not have to have fiddle with options on getting into a competitive match and stuff like that.
And then it favors teams with more players, mm-hmm. because you can get more votes for the map that those groups want to play, which can be kind of frustrating. And then you have the blackout issue that we had with Halo all the time, and every time Blackout comes up, you just play Blackout every single time. Like, that's the map. That's the map everyone wants to play, and the maps that are generally the community's favorites get played, and other maps don't. And there's a lot of, does that matter? Well, in practicing, it does matter, right? If you know that everyone's going to vote for Blackout every time it comes out, if you know that everyone's going to vote for Ilios, yeah, right, every time it comes out, you're going to practice more on Ilios. You're going to try and be better at Ilios, and it's going to affect how you practice and how you play the game. So I think that there are some great counterpoints to not having like a map voting tool. At the same time, at the end of the day, I just kind of want to play the maps that I want to play. I'm almost diamond. I'm not an amazing player by any means. I'm not practicing maps. I'm not a competitive Overwatch player. So why not just, you know, let me play the maps I want to play?
Well, and I think eventually they're going to have to do something with maps, because the way things are going right now, there's clearly no slowing the release schedule for characters and maps. So hypothetically, right down the road, eventually there's just going to be a ton of maps, like arguably too many maps. Right. And if they don't start introducing some way for you to individually like veto maps or a map rotation or something, like, it's going to be overwhelming to know all of the maps. And there's definitely an interesting like cyclical problem where if you were to draw the comparison to most any other shooting franchise, the games get re-released, right? Every year, other year, there's a new Call of Duty, there's another Halo game, whatever. And the map pool shrinks back to a standard size pool, right? Here's the 8 maps that ship with the game, and you'll get, you know, 3 more in each DLC pack over the course of the next 2 years or whatever. Overwatch is never going to do that. We aren't anticipating them dropping Overwatch 2 on us sometime next year, right? That's not, I don't think anybody
Spoiler
thinks that's
alert.
Happening.
Dang.
Relax. Relax. It's not happening.
Okay, Blizzard.
I don't
just
think.
Kidding. Can't
yeah,
say
yeah
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's not do that. But no, it's I 100%. I think that as they continue to add more content to the game, eventually they're going to have to say, okay, for competitive season 4, here are the 10 maps that will be in rotation. And then in, you know, competitive season 5, three of those maps come out and three new maps come in or whatever, because otherwise you're just going to have way too many. Like, you could go a whole season without playing on some maps, or especially for newer players. And this is something we constantly forget, right? Right now, it's probably not awful for a new player to get in and learn most or all of the maps in a reasonable amount of time. But a year from now, what if there are 5 or 10 more maps, right?
What if you?
But just, you know, for sake of argument, at some point there will be that many maps, right? Like, down the road, I would definitely expect they have to do something. Like, otherwise, there's a problem there that has to be solved at some point, and they have to plan for it.
I mean, right now we are seeing 1 to 2 new maps a year, right? Like, I would say optimistically, we say 2. Ideal year, 3 new maps. That means that realistically, we're probably 3 to 4 years before I think this even needs to become a conversation. I think the bigger conversation is the maps that are more fun than others. How do you make sure that, basically, how do you make sure that people have the most fun playing your game? And part of that is playing the maps that the most people want to play on, but you also, everyone's different, and there's lots of, you have like the ban system in World of Warcraft, right, where you can, I believe, ban 2 maps, right? Is it 2 or
yeah.
3? 2, and you just never see those. But if you're one of the people who really like Isle of Conquest, get a life. But let's say you do like Isle of Conquest and you wanted to play that, you're now in 20, 25, 30 minute queues because they have to fill 2 40 man sides, and everybody else banned it because it's not that fun of a map and Alliance always wins. So, like, I think a ban, if you could do like 1 ban, great, but I don't think that the maps, There are enough maps that are just aren't good for a multiplayer setting in a game that is so specifically multiplayer that they're actually going to introduce any sort of bans, any sort of rotating map pool. I think we're years out. I think we're years out before we see that.
Maybe. I legitimately think that the map pool right now is good and that all of the maps are fun. I don't think there's any map I really don't want to play on. I mean, arguably there are maps that are better or worse for really high level play. But in terms of my day-to-day experience playing the game, there's no map where I think, oh, I just don't ever want to play Hanamura ever again. Like, I don't have that thought when I load up on any map. It's more just, it would be nice to be able to say, God, I haven't played Control in 5 games, or I want to see a better spread of, hybrid maps in my placements or whatever. Like, there's a granularity there that I think is lacking for players when you already have so many rules in place because you've got 1 hero limit in comp and stuff like that. It would be nice people to say, you know what, like, yeah, I really want to play on a Control map right now. That would be something that would make me feel good, and I can't make that choice. Even in quick play, I can't make that choice. So, you know, you're talking about practicing maps. The only way you can do that is what, customs? If you've got 12 people on your friends list ready to rock and roll in a private match. So there's definitely.
No, but there's a solution coming for that.
Right. Okay. But in general, it's something that I think the game is going to have to continue to iterate on, right? Map selection, map pool size. Like, it's, there's definitely a vision of what that looks like in the future that we're not at yet.
Okay. We'll see. Yeah. We'll have to see. What transpires as far as map pools and how you pick them, you know, we'll see. Let's go into the news.
This week in Overwatch.
Before we do get started, we do want to thank our MVPs, Adam B, J.A., Coral, and Tommy H. Thank you so much for your support of the show. We hope you enjoy it. I hope you're going to play some Maze Snowball Offensive with us afterwards. But regardless, thank you so much for your support of the payload. And if you want to find out more on how you can support the show so we can go, we're like $20 a month away from getting a merch store. And we can finally show off those awesome t-shirts. And we've got a couple other things cooking in the kitchen. So Head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast. Find out how you can get involved. All right. I was hoping Rosh was going to be here for this, but she's not. So we do have a new Overwatch comic called Reflections. And it is
set packed. The internet on fire.
Yeah, it is. The internet is on fire, and it is packed with some amazing lore tidbits. So let's take a look. Let's get the big news out of the way. Tracer has a girlfriend. Her name is Emily. And Tracer bought her a scarf for Christmas. And she's still a badass. So, yay. Woo. However, the internet was lit on fire about that. And also, here's something I learned. Tracer does not always need to wear her chronal accelerator, which is interesting. She's just hanging out without it on. You know, whatever. Anyways, so that's the big news out of the way. I put the comic pane up on the screen for those tuning in for video so we can kind of talk through some of these lore tidbits. But before we do, what did you guys think of this seasonal digital comic? Did you like it? Hate it?
I loved it. I mean, it's like any other like show that has a Christmas special or whatnot, and you see everyone what they're doing for Christmas and how they're spending their holiday season. And I mean, it just hits on pretty much everyone in the Overwatch universe, and there's a lot of lore crammed into this one panel that has like 10 things on it. But yeah, I'm really excited for this. I'm really happy that they put this comic out, and haters gonna hate.
Kev, what do you think?
I'm gonna take the unpopular opinion on this one. I actually didn't think that this was all that interesting of a comic. I mean, there was some pretty cool lore reveals, like the Tracer relationship thing obviously is a big deal and created some good conversation and a lot of controversial, not good conversation. But outside of that, the other comics have all had like these really interesting character developing stories and told us something about the history of Overwatch or the character. And this one, really all we learned is that Tracer has a girlfriend, right? And then the rest of it is all like these little kind of speculative, we can look at single pieces of single parts of single frames and say, oh, okay, you know, there's this information. And a lot of it isn't self-explanatory. A lot of people took to forums and Twitter and said, hey, who are all the kids sitting with Reinhardt? Or, you know, they had to ask questions that the comic itself doesn't answer. So ultimately, if you were going to read through this and just try to experience it as a comic, not as a like crazed Overwatch fan desperately seeking every possible iota of information that you could squeeze out of every single piece of every frame, as a comic, it's just kind of meh. Like, it doesn't tell a story. There's not much going on. The frame by frame, like, here's Reaper crying in the rain or whatever, that kind of stuff, like, for us is great because we've got all of this additional context and we're trying to predict what's going to come next based on that information. But as a straight up comic, as a like one off experience, like 6 out of 10, maybe. I had a lot of fun discussing like the relationship, the Tracer stuff. There's lots of things about it that were good conversation starters, but it's not a great story in and of itself.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not going to watch the Doctor Who Christmas special and not having watched the rest of Doctor Who for that context.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, it's the unpopular opinion. It's not that it wasn't fun, but it's just not great content. I would have been so much more excited to get Tracer backstory, not Tracer running around buying Christmas gifts. Like, it's not what I wanted.
I love that Blizzard came out and answered all these questions that people had about the comic. One of them was that Farah, that's not a date, so we can speculate on who exactly she's with there. Looks like an older gentleman, so maybe her father, ? And also, I think the funniest one of all the questions that people asked was, whose kids are those in that shot? And apparently they're all Torbjorn's. That dude is busy. That's all I gotta say.
Good for
him. How many kids are in there?
We're gonna. I think two, there's three. Eight, Lots. But I believe
nine.
One, nine. I believe one. We're gonna talk about in a little bit, but one might be Brigitte from the Reinhardt comic itself. They look very similar and kind of have a similar mannerism. So we're gonna talk about that and say we're gonna go. Let's. I don't want to go pane by pane, but I want to hit the big ones here because there are definitely some significant quote unquote spoilers. By the way, if you haven't read the comic yet and you don't want to be spoiled, pause.
Too late.
comic.playoverwatch.com. Read. Unpause. Okay, we did it. We did our civic duty, and now we're going to spoil some anyways. So first and foremost, top left pane, we've got Genji writing a letter. Zenyatta getting ready to pelt Genji with some snowballs. Just kidding, probably not. But he's balancing some orbs of snowball harmony, whatever. However, the big reveal here kind of is that Mercy in the bottom right pane is reading a letter with the feather pen that looks like is the one that Genji wrote with. We also know that Genji kind of uses a feather as his little sign off. We saw that in the dragon's digital short. So first and foremost, is he writing to Mercy? Do you guys think, is that pretty unanimous here, or do you think it's something different?
Yeah, I think it's telegraphed pretty clearly that they are writing back and forth to each other.
Cool. I actually wouldn't be surprised if that was just something to throw people off. I would actually be less surprised that it's totally the other way around and that there's not as specific a relationship there, and that that's exactly what they wanted, was they wanted to fuel the old speculation machine, but hard to know, right? Again, this comic didn't answer a lot of questions. It just asked a lot of new ones. So okay, I could believe, yeah, I could believe there's a relationship there, but I would be less surprised if they were trying to insinuate something there that isn't actually there.
I don't know if we've been misdirected like that before. I don't know. Like,
that's true. Yeah, I'm not sure. This, I don't know if that one counts.
We've been dragged on for months on end, but I don't think we've been misdirected in the sense where, oh, let's make two people, one writing a letter, one reading a letter, totally different parts of the world, who have already have pretty some specific ties in the lore, and actually make it have nothing to do with each other, right? So we'll have to see. I think they're definitely... they're definitely a little, there's a little Genji, I think is the word, Genji going on there. Team Genji. I'm all about it. So that's the first one. Second one, we've got Santa Torbjorn with his wife and Reinhardt, Uncle Reinhardt, hanging out with all nine of Torbjorn's children, confirmed by the Play Overwatch Twitter, right? That one was confirmed by Play Overwatch, not Michael Chu directly, I believe. So that's pretty cool that Torbjorn and Reinhardt seem to be kind of dude friends. Close enough that they're hanging out on Christmas.
Also confirms that Torbjorn has two hands, which we technically didn't know up to this point.
What?
You can see both of his hands. In the picture, you can see both of his hands.
Oh, no, they already talked about... Michael Chu already answered. I didn't even know where you're going. You already answered that it wasn't... he wasn't...
amputated, yeah.
Amputated, yeah.
Like an amputee, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So...
yeah, but I mean, just that's something that people definitely, like, pointed out. I remember people freaking out because visually it's not the same as what you see in the game. And I think a lot of people reacted to that, so...
yeah, we don't see any Hanzo ankles, but those are real too. He's got real ankles as well. So we've got that. One of the biggest pieces of speculation is that what appears to be the eldest daughter may not be daughter at all, is actually Brigitte from the Reinhardt comic. So We don't know, but I think that would be kind of interesting, spending Christmas together. It thematically makes sense, I think, maybe. But we do know, we have been confirmed that those are Torbjorn's children, all of them. So, okay, that's one. The other one I wanted to hit here, Sombra and McCree hanging out at the same bar. That's kind of interesting, right?
It was interesting to me at first, and then I kind of thought about it. I was like, they're both kind of outlaws operating outside the realm of the law, so it's not surprising that they have crossed paths at some point.
One's Blackwatch, and the other one is like a double agent talent operative. We don't know her real allegiance yet. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they're not on anybody's side, so exactly. It doesn't seem like a huge shock that they would both end up kind of in the neutral zone bar hanging out. Kind of unfortunate McCree's such a lightweight, passed out already, though.
Yeah, that's weak. I expect
you. I expect
more. You
don't
know how many he's had. You don't know how many. It could be like 10 of those bad boys. You don't know. Anyway.
Maybe he started at noon.
Kevin. No, that was great.
This has been episode 50 of The Payload. Bye, Kevin. See ya.
It was a pleasure.
Bye.
Good luck.
Those can be your last words. Oh no, I hit the wrong button. There it is.
No.
Boom. We're back. Okay. So there's one. This is honestly one of the most interesting to me. You've got a Widowmaker at Gerard's grave with a rose on it. So Widowmaker's backstory is essentially that she was brainwashed by Talon to kill her husband, assassinate him. And every piece of lore I believe we have so far that I can recall is she really has no connection to her life necessarily before the brainwash, if that makes sense. So that is kind of surprising. So that kind of debunks to some extent that she's not at least still, that she doesn't at least remember Gerard. Does she know that she's the one who killed him? Is she being blackmailed? Do you guys have any theories on this one here?
I'd like to think that she has a little bit of her humanity left and is kind of starting to realize what she's done, and that she was brainwashed, and maybe this is just paying tribute to that part of her life that she's able to recollect from her memory. I would like that, because I always love a good redemption story, especially for a character that's so savage in the Overwatch universe. I mean, obviously we saw in the digital short her killing, I can't remember his name, but the Omnic, whose statue is up now in King's Row. So I hope it's that. It'll be interesting to see what direction Blizzard does actually go with the Widowmaker story, because I think her story is actually pretty rich and deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole like neural reconditioning thing and the angle that she had, like, you know, memory loss or, you know, straight up just brainwashed all memory of her former self. That leaves a lot of opportunity, right? As a storytelling thing, it gives them a lot of room to play with her bumping into those memories or having things, you know, flashbacks that trigger where she does remember her old life. And I wouldn't be surprised if, even if she has no memory of the events prior to the assassination of Gerard, that she would remember that itself. And maybe that's sort of, you know, in itself a story. It's her first memory, because everything else from before that is gone. And so she kind of goes back to that spot and that memory, trying to evaluate her life since then. Like, there's lots of ways that they could use that little teeny snippet. And this is, again, right, this is the stuff where you have to have a lot of background and a lot of context to take much out of that panel. But it is one of the more interesting ones.
And it's speculation time. So we just say stupid speculation until it's proved wrong, right? We write the story until Michael Chu and Blizzard correct us. And then we change everything that we knew about the game. And, you know, whatever. That's how it works. No, I don't think any other real huge ones. We talked a little bit about Pharah is not on a date in this one. We don't know who Soldier 76 is looking at in the picture. Anna looks sad, and where she's looking in the comic happens to line up right with Reinhardt. So people are still very, very willing to speculate that Anna and Reinhardt are still kind of a thing, kind of an item, at least to some extent. You just have Roadhog and Junkrat living it up
to their shenanigans.
Crimes. Yep, in Luna Park in Australia is where I believe the general consensus of where that is. You've got Hanzo looking at a cake in a really awesome jacket. And yeah, I think that's kind of... Oh yeah, and you have Reaper crying in the rain. Not really. I don't know if he's crying, but he's looking at a family who...
He's listening to Linkin Park.
Yeah. God, it's so bad. It's so bad. So there's lots of... There's some that are very big stretches to make. Like, I would say Reaper and the woman in the picture was his wife before the whole Overwatch debacle. Like, I think that's a huge stretch. And then you have the smaller stretches where you've got... The Genji Mercy pains, where there has to be a lot of oversight or intentionality to make those pains happen the way that they did. So overall, 6 out of 10. No, just kidding. Oh yeah. All right. Anything else you guys want to hit on this comic, or can we talk about some esports?
Let's talk about some esports.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
Putta on.
All right, well, we did have some esports going on this week in the world of Overwatch. First, we had IEM. Jiyoungi went on, and like we talked about last week, the biggest names in the Asia-Pacific region, specifically China and South Korea, went head-to-head, and Luxury Watch Red, which they should have called Luxury Watch Purple because it was a combination of their red and blue rosters. They kind of made one big, they called it an all-star roster for this tournament. Defeats Lunatic Eye, another team who is vastly well-respected in the world of Overwatch, in the finals. So, great games played overall. No big surprises in the meta. We're starting to see a little bit of Symmetra Torbjorn defense on two capture point maps, which is kind of cool to see that. All it is an extra 150 health, 75 of that being armor and 75 of that being shield. Big deal, guys. BFD.
It adds up.
Right. It does. It's a lot. That's an extra tracer on your team 6 times. That's 6 extra tracers, kind of closer probably to 6 extra Zenyattas that can't do damage. So, you know.
I just thought the interesting thing about this tournament is that both the teams that got a bye lost 3-1. I just find that funny.
Yeah, sorry, we just got spammed in chat. I didn't want to say anything because I couldn't concentrate.
It's all good.
Did you guys, any other big takeaways from this one? This one was a lot harder to watch because it started at around 1 a.m. And so unless you watched the VOD, it was pretty hard. I kept up with all the matches on over.gg, but I didn't get to watch a whole lot. I watched the first day and then kind of the finals, and that was kind of it. But Great Hearthstone. Great Overwatch was played. And it's really interesting seeing all these regional tournaments pop up now that we're, I don't know if people are prepping for Overwatch League or it's just a coincidence, but we've got MLG Vegas, which was NA. You've got IEM, which was APAC and all APAC. I think, Rogue was there, weren't they? Rogue.
Yeah, Rogue was direct invite as well.
So I guess not totally, but we're seeing more of that. We're seeing trades to make rosters more unified with regions. In MLG Vegas, though, this was one I watched a lot of, and we did have Envious defeat FaZe in the final. So Envious, no huge surprise. A lot of the tournament was who's going to place second and third and fourth. What are the top 2 through 4 teams in NA? And I think FaZe was a bit of a surprise. They defeated Liquid and Cloud9 to get there. So that's kind of a big deal. Cloud9 was, I know, one that we predicted on this show to do well with, you know, Sure4 and Adam and such an amazing roster there. So what'd you guys think of MLG Vegas and the results?
I really liked the event. I mean, I was only able to watch the second day, but the second day was really great because we had that insanely good series between FaZe and Fnatic. And in the end, it just looked like that series literally took everything out of FaZe Clan. And they just did not look good against Envious in the finals. And Envious just, they had like an hour or two at least to rest before the grand finals, so they came in relaxed and ready to go. And I think the overall thing with Envious is just that their hero roster is just so giant right now for their team that they're definitely the top dogs right now, especially in North America. Kevin, what do you think?
I mean, So I think we all sort of agreed. I was very much, when we talked about this last week, on the Envious is going to clean house train. And they did. And I don't think that's a shock to anybody. Only dropping a single map in the entire tournament is not exactly what I expected. Because usually, even for a dominant team like that, their sets have been slightly closer in the past. Like, this was a blowout. Like, C9 couldn't touch them. They only dropped that lone map to Complexity in the group stages. Fnatic couldn't touch them. Like, it just, those games were blowouts, right? And the final, right, with FaZe, also, again, just a total blowout. I think the FaZe story is the interesting one, though, in terms of a takeaway from MLG. Like, you saw Envious do what Envious does, and there were no surprises in the outcome in that respect. But FaZe really showed up, and I think demonstrated why they are becoming a serious contender. Because coming into this, I knew they had done okay. I knew their results were all right. And that was what I was looking at, because I didn't know a lot about their players or their roster up to this point. But now it's like, okay, no, these guys are one of the teams to watch, because beating Fnatic in the semis tells me that they are a very competent team, and they did do quite well. I mean, their group stage games were closer than obviously Envious's, but I'm not sure that if you were to go back and have them play that set again with a little more rest, because I know a lot of people commented on the fact that they had to go more or less straight into the grand final. I'm not sure that that would have been a 4-0 set. I mean, FaZe being tight with Fnatic, obviously Envy didn't lose any games to Fnatic either, but that like all of those guys, I think it just on the right day, any of them could have taken games off of Envious without too much difficulty. But I stand by my prediction. I stand by the outcome that Envious was the best team in that tournament. And I think they are the best Western team right now. They hold that throne pretty authoritatively.
Yeah. And the thing I really liked about the grand finals was they spent a lot of time moving over to the vision of Harry Hook on Soldier 76. And his play was just
so good.
Incredible and inspiring. And I really liked at the end during the medal ceremony or trophy ceremony, whatever you want to call it, they basically confirmed that Mickey is a permanent part of Envious. I mean, winning two majors when you have a fit someone into your team last second like that, I think that deserves an invite to the the team there.
Well, didn't they actually say that effective as of the end of the tournament, they had signed him as of the 18th. I think they said he was officially signed. So that was that was an outcome of the tournament, basically, was that they were able to walk away and say, yeah, we're keeping him, which is great because given the way that he joined the team and the way that that came about as just kind of like an emergency sub, you think, we'll see. You know, it's hard to know how well he'll gel. He gelled.
He's pretty darn well. Just
fine. They made it. Yep.
His
they made it work.
Really good.
Yeah. He was really clutch. He's been clutch for Envious since Apex season one. And I think we're going to continue to see more great things from Envious as they go forward. They just look so good and so comfortable in this meta right now. I don't know if you guys hit on it while I had to jump up, but Taimu having over a 40-hour travel snafu. So he literally got off. They had delay. It was just nuts. And he goes in and he just cleans house. And maybe I think he has solidified himself as a top three, if not the best Roadhog in the world right now, because man, he was on a point, and that's with all the jet lag and fatigue and anger and frustration. But he did tweet out and say, it took me over 40 hours to get here. I'm not leaving without a trophy, basically. So, you know, kudos, all great series to watch. I think it was a nice, fun week for competitive Hearthstone, to say the least. So, all right, let's hit up on a couple dev posts. Every week we like to just kind of comb through the blue posts and find kind of any cool nuggets that we didn't have last week. And besides the thousands of threads that were locked about the Overwatch.
I wonder what they could be about.
The Overwatch comic. We did find a few things. This one's a couple weeks old, but we just combed over it or missed it, ran out of time. There will be no new season rewards that cost competitive points for season 3 and likely season 4. That's straight from Jeff Kaplan. Somebody posted, hey, should I hold on to my competitive points or can I buy these golden guns? And he's like, buy it. We're not making any changes to this.
How many of us have golden guns? Not me. Okay, John has one. Kevin doesn't.
Got my golden 76 gun.
I'm assuming Rosh does. Or it's not a gun. It's a Cadius whatever reactor.
Cadius reactor. That's what we're calling it from now on this show. The Cadius reactor. Redacted, Jim. So, yeah, I don't think it's super surprising either, but he also, like, I think they have to kind of change something for their most competitive players. Do you think we see a different color skin, or what do you think the long-term solution the Overwatch team might be thinking about beyond golden guns might be? Maybe a second tier? So after you get a golden guns, another 3,000 competitive points, and you make it golden with flames on it. I don't know.
No, I mean, there's lots of cool, I think, ways that they can introduce additional like things people would want to get for unlocks, reasons to jump on and play. They have to get away from some of the stuff that they've done that's loot box driven. And that was the one thing that made the guns really interesting, is you can't get gun skins or weapon skins from loot boxes. I wouldn't be shocked to see them do something similar down the road, where like maybe you could do custom color variants of skins or custom badging on, like, you know, after you've prestiged and you get your stars, maybe you could custom color those or something based on seasonal reward points, because they can just take those competitive points and continue to allow them to accrue and apply to something new that's purchasable. And I think that like in-game banners of some kind, or the ability to customize sprays with additional details, stuff like that, it's not anything that's going to change the game. It has to stay cosmetic, but there's lots of vectors for them to add more. And frankly, at the current rate of acquisition for all but the best players, the idea of anything other than Golden Guns is really a total non-starter, because you could play the game for the next 10 years and not collect all the Golden Guns, depending on how fast the seasons come out and rate of acquisition of points. But for like an average player, you're not at any risk of getting all the Golden Guns anytime soon.
Right. Totally agree. The other thing that we got from Jeff Kaplan is that there are no specific Valentine's Day or Easter events scheduled for 2017. So he did say they have exciting events planned and they're, you know, really excited about them and all that stuff, but they will not be Valentine's or Easter themed.
I think that's good. I mean, yeah, it would be nice to have more themed stuff like that. And they could be really creative with Valentine's or Easter content, but there comes a saturation point where
it's a lot of events.
I don't know. You just need to, not necessarily the events is the problem, but the amount of loot boxes that you have to, that you feel like you have to buy if you're someone
who is buying loot boxes, it's just like insane.
Yeah,
$50 every time that those come out. I buy 50 more loot boxes and regret it.
So I mean, what's the magic number in that? We had three events in 2016, three or four. I feel like is the magic number of feeling overwhelming.
I think the biggest thing for me is I don't want to see the same events every year, for one. I think that's a big thing. For two, I think that you have a bit of an advantage in that there's so many things going on in the world and in the Overwatch world that you can make relatable in game, as opposed to like if you go through the primary holiday events that they've done in WoW and Hearthstone. They're all very consistently like the major U.S. holidays, basically, right? They do Valentine's Day, then they do Easter, and then they do a Thanksgiving event, and they do a Christmas event. And like, don't get me wrong, Halloween theme in Overwatch was great. Christmas theme in Overwatch was great. But I really liked the summer games. I thought that was a really great departure where it was like, this is something that we weren't celebrating in any other Blizzard franchise. And it's not just what time of year it is. It was something that was special. It was something that was interesting. And I feel like
it made it more worldwide too. I feel like
absolutely it did. And that's one of the things that really appealed to me about it is that the Olympics is something that speaks to everybody. Whereas there are a lot of parts of the world and cultures where, I mean, Christmas just isn't as big of a deal, right? Or Halloween isn't a thing. And that's something I would like to see them keep looking at. What are the big events in the world? What other things can we do that speak to more than just a handful of, you know, cultures or regions? And that's something that I think they can do. And the fact that they've already said no Valentine's Day, no Easter, says to me that like they want to do a spring event that isn't tied to one of those existing holidays. And that's really encouraging to me. Like, I mean, I'm all for like, let's have Overwatch spring break and have all the characters in their ridiculous vacation garb partying in Mexico. Like, sure,
I was thinking of totally different kind of spring break when you said that, but
I'm sure you were, but you know what I mean, right?
Like, fan art for that.
Anyway, it's definitely something I'm looking forward to seeing them get away from the same holidays that, you know, are coming every year and repeat every year. Yeah, you're probably going to see us reprise the Halloween event or the Christmas event, but it would be nice for there to be some more variety and not do the exact same stuff constantly.
Right. Especially over kind of B tier holidays, like a holiday, like a winter holiday type event makes sense. Like the end of the year, almost everybody is celebrating something.
You mean like a Hallmark holiday versus a real holiday?
Right. Yep. You know. Hey, happy day after
happy Administrator's Day
Saturday in spring. Here are 100 new cosmetic items.
But like,
oh my gosh.
Just for sake of argument, right? Like they could do a really cool Overwatch anniversary event, and that'll fall kind of in the same window, in that like late spring post Easter window, right? Or they could do like a unified event that's supposed to be a celebration of all the big family holidays, right? Start an event that opens on Mother's Day and ends on Father's Day or whatever. Like there's lots of stuff they could do that just hasn't been done in a lot of the other existing Blizzard franchises. That would be really cool.
Yep. I totally agree. All right. let's move on. So last but not least, with it being Kevin's last show and the second to last show of the year, but kind of the last show before Christmas and everything kind of gets crazy here before the new year starts, we wanted to do our 2016 year in review. 2016, the Payload Podcast year in review.
Hey everybody, welcome to the inaugural episode of the Payload.
We've got some big, exciting, extravagant, wonderful news. Our new permanent co-host of the Payload from Fade to Karma is Rosh.
John and I are presenting on panels at Calm Before the Storm.
Thank you to Twitch for allowing me to present at TwitchCon.
That's going
to
do it for us this week from myself, Rosh, Kevin, and Jimmy. Bye-bye, everybody. It took way too long to edit, by the way.
That's
going
super cute.
Through and finding that was cool. All those kind of key moments, right? So we had an exciting year outside of Overwatch. Just the show is barely a year old now, so had to throw in the first thing that we said on the air, which was that we introduced Rosh as our fourth, who we miss dearly this week. Kevin and I got to Kevin and I got to speak at Con Before the Storm at BlizzCon. Jimmy got to moderate his own panel at TwitchCon. Like, it's been a lot of really fun, cool things that have happened to the show. And so we wanted to kind of take a moment, reflect on those, and also reflect on 2016 as a year for Overwatch and what we're looking forward to in 2017. This also coincides with Jeff Kaplan's developer update, which is also titled Year in Review. So first and foremost, let's talk about just the show in general. Let's just talk about our favorite moments of kind of the show, the Payload, and the things that we've done in the last year. Putting you on the spot, Kevin, you're up first.
I thought I might be. This has been a lot of fun. I mean, when we first started the show, we were trying really hard to figure out, like, what vibe do we want to hit and what kind of commentary do we want to provide on the game, on the scene. And we really had to work those first few months at, like, finding something to say that would allow us to keep the show kind of flowing while we were waiting to get into the tail end of the beta and have more people see the game and try it and write into us and give us ideas of what they want to hear about. And we did some cool stuff. I mean, we got a chance to really go through and talk about the individual characters, really speak to our expectations of balance and what needed to change in the game. And we've talked about a lot of the things that have later come to be changed in the game, right? Looking at character kits or interactions that were unfun or unfair and saying, yeah, like, that's going to have to get tweaked in the future. We've seen a lot of that really play out over the course of the year. And ever since release, we've been able to talk almost every week about just watching how explosive Overwatch has become as an esport in the competitive space. Going from honestly not being that big of a deal during beta and some kind of small cups and weekly tournaments to arguably one of the best, largest, and most organized esports on the planet. And nothing made me happier than the announcement of the Overwatch League at BlizzCon. I think that's something that, even if I had wanted to predict the extent of what they were going to do, was totally outside the realm of what I was expecting. You could talk absolutely about Blizzard's plans for Overwatch esports and stuff, but they went well above and beyond, and even historically for Blizzard, way earlier in terms of how they've decided to support their game than any of their franchises previously. So this is an enormous, enormous year for Overwatch and for the show, because we got to kind of follow it along and speak to all those things, starting from nothing, starting from small potatoes, like which offense characters should you play and when, which characters are better than or worse.
We were one of like three shows when
we got in there on the ground floor, and we've worked to make sure that there was good content on the show every week. And I really loved all the strategy segments we did. I loved talking people through kind of the headspace of what matters when you play this kind of game. Why do you value mobility as highly as you do? Stuff like that. I loved it every week. So it's been a cool year that way. And then the esports side of things just blew me away every single time.
Jimmy Domus called that Overwatch leak, by the way. He just has a way of seeing those things.
I remember we had
like 20 minute argument about if that was going to happen. That was funny. Jimmy, what were your highlights here?
Definitely one of my highlights was, I'm pretty sure it was the first episode that Rosh was on, and she made fun of you guys for playing on console, like almost immediately, right out of the gate. Oh my goodness. But one of my other favorite moments was, there was a week that I got to host the show, and somehow Patrick Beja accepted my invitation to be on the show. And that's still probably one of my highlights of podcasting, just because Patrick's someone I really look up to in the podcasting Blizzard gaming scene. So that was really fun. And yeah, just building this from the ground up, talking about Overwatch for well over a year now and seeing it grow and kind of seeing that it was going to be a big thing. I mean, we all thought, okay, this is going to be a big game for Blizzard, but I don't think any of us imagined just how big it was going to be in the community around it. All the memes, the Gremlin Diva and stuff like that. I mean, it's been incredible. And 2017 is primed to be an even better year for Overwatch.
Yeah. I would say, as for me, I think adding Rosh was great. Having Patrick on the show was awesome. For me, I think Overwatch winning Game of the Year at the Game Awards was really exciting to know that, you know, Blizzard, in a time where it's like, what's Blizzard going to do next? What's their next thing? Can they still create new games outside of their existing IPs? And they're just like, frick yeah, and it's going to win. It's going to be multiplayer only, and it's going to win Game of the Year. You're like, okay, all right, fair enough. And they did that. Like, that was really exciting for me to see. So lots of good stuff that we had happen. Let's look forward to 2017 a little bit, shall we? Let's, in the year in review, Jeff, you know, kind of went through and talked about a lot of things that we just talked about, you know, the new maps, the new heroes, the official launch of the game. And, he then went ahead and talked about, what we're going to see in 2017. So Oasis is still on track for early 2017. They are working on a customizable track wheel so that you can have, you know, different emotes and request healing and all those different things, right from, you know, a track wheel that's more customizable overall, a spray wheel with four different sprays. So you can have your BM spray, your celebration spray. And
I don't know why I'm excited for that, but just having the option of having more sprays than just one going on is actually pretty cool. I'm glad that they're doing it. And obviously the customizable track wheel will be fun to play around with, I'm sure.
We're also going to have a join team chat button similar to the stay as group button so that it's not so much. And even on PC, it's not that bad, but like on console, it's a pain in the butt. It's about five or six movements before you can actually go from party chat to team chat. It's just kind of a pain in the butt. So they're going to have that. And we talked about this earlier. This is kind of the big news. They're working on a server browser for custom games, and version 1.0 is hopefully out in early 2017. So we talked a little bit earlier about how do you practice for specific matches and specific maps without having 11 other people or six other people or playing against bots and all that stuff. And well, this is kind of an answer to that. We'll have to see how it ends up being, but custom game types, I am a huge fan of. And it's something like for me with Halo, how we got good at Halo wasn't playing Team Slayer as much as it was playing these weird custom maps with headshots only and in this small confined space. And who knows what custom games will look like when it launches, as well as, you know, in the future. It could be really exciting for players wanting to up their game, you know, and get a little bit more customized in their Overwatch experience. Any other things here? What are you guys most excited for 2017 from Overwatch?
Besides Overwatch League, new maps and new heroes coming up. I'm anything that shifts the meta, shakes it up is going to be fun to play on, and really excited to see if they try to introduce some new modes as well.
Cool. What about you, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the Overwatch League, some of the game feature enhancements that we've heard talked about, obviously a custom game browser would be incredible. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do to improve the spectating experience for esports and third party, even if it's being able to spectate friends games in game through the client, stuff like that. I think there's just a lot of room to improve the experience of watching Overwatch being played. I think that's somewhere where there's room for the game to grow a lot. And I know that this is going to be a controversial one, but I'm looking forward to them continuing to patch the game really aggressively. I think that we've established at this point that Blizzard is going to continue to tweak characters and kits as necessary a lot to make sure that the game feels good, and that they've just said kind of bold faced with the way that they've modified the game up to this point, don't get attached to the way a character works specifically. The core ideas and identities of characters and kits will stay the same. You know, Soldier 76 is never going to be able to fly, but
I rebuke that. Soldier 76 flying 2017.
But I think they're going to say, you know what, like as new characters come out, as new maps come out, as meta shifts and identifies strengths or weaknesses, we're going to keep making big changes, because you have to think back. And I mean, you're really going to have to reach for some of these things, but like try to remember what D.Va was like before the changes to her defensive matrix. Try to remember, you know, like what some of these characters played like old Symmetra. It's almost like it never happened, right? The game in its current state is so good that we just kind of have forgotten that there were times when characters were much better or much, much worse. And I don't want them to stop doing that. I want them to continue working very hard to build the game up and give it more and better balance constantly, because I don't think they can just say, yep, nope, this is good, we're done, and walk away from it. I think balance is going to be something that's going to continue to evolve every month, every patch, every new character, every new map.
Yeah, I think that's good. Oh, I think that's good. Blizzard, thank you for an amazing game, an amazing 2016. We're excited to continue podcasting about it in 2017 and beyond. It's been a good year, and I think on that...
Time is money, friends, and we're almost flat broke!
Now comes a time where we must say goodbye to a very, very special person, very near and dear to all of our hearts, Mr. Kevin Hovdestad. It is your last show. We are sad to see you go, but we are very excited for the things that you do at Blizzard as an associate editor, something or whatnot. Anyways, Kev, this is your goodbye. We're really sad to see you leave. It's bittersweet. Like I said, we've been doing this for a year and a half now. We've been kind of the 1-2 punch. I've never done a podcast without you. We can basically say that. So, but what are the things, any things that you want to get off your chest? Jimmy, of course, anything you want to add, as well as we say goodbye to Kevin. Don't worry, I won't play the sad music again.
Kevin, it's been a pleasure working with you. And I'm sure in the future in your job, we'll be working together in some capacity, because esports connects us together. But it's been really fun doing this podcast with you. And I wish you all the best at Blizzard. And now you're closer to me. Maybe I can see you a little more often than just BlizzCon.
Yeah, we're going to have to hang out. The last couple of years, I don't want to like burden anybody with the details. If you want to hear the full story, you're welcome to ask. But the last couple of years had been pretty hard. There's a lot of stuff that I had to sort of fight uphill to get through. I had to rebuild my whole life, my career, kind of set out on this path with really nothing to my name. Just try to see what happens. all the way through. I've had the privilege of working with you guys and doing some really cool stuff, going to events and doing the shows and writing articles and hosting game nights. And, you know, every part of it has been special. It's been very important to me to make time for this every week, both shows. But, you know, because we're here on the payload, this was something that I cared a lot about, and I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it a lot, because as much fun as it's going to be to kind of start this next chapter and experience some new things, go on with some crazy new challenges, I don't think I would have made it to this point without doing what we did together. And that's something that I'm not going to forget. So you haven't seen or heard the last of me.
Oh, I'm just kidding. We're not going. That was sweet.
Oh my goodness.
No more crying. No more crying on the show, chat. Grab your Kleenex. Buddy up. It's time to put this show to bed for the week and play some snowball fighting and all those things. We'll make sure to do all the shout outs and everything before we go. But first, what's going on with Patreon, Jimmy?
Well, first of all, we always have to thank our MVPs, Adam B, J.A. Coral, and Tommy H. Thank you all so very much for supporting the podcast and being our MVPs of the payload. As always, if you like the show and want to show your support, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast and find out everything about the Patreon there, all the tiers and rewards. And we're still, like John said right at the beginning of the show, we're very close to that $200 merch store. Help us get there if you like the show, and we'd really appreciate it. And thanks to Lydia D as well for becoming a patron of the show.
Awesome. Thank you, Lydia. Welcome. And yeah, thank you all so much for your support of the show. Kev, what are we doing for iTunes reviews this week?
We got nothing for brand new iTunes reviews for the payload this week. But guys, obviously, iTunes reviews continue to be super important to us. We use those as a way to promote the show. They help people find us, because the better reviewed we are, the easier it is to search out this content. And you know what? If you've enjoyed the show, I think it's really important that you go and let us know, because every bit of feedback counts. And I, for one, can now, as a non-host, go and leave a 5-star review. So you guys can shout me out on the next one. We'll do it that way.
Yeah, like you haven't already.
I don't just, think I have.
Just leave a 5-star review and don't put a message. Come on. Not hard. Unbelievable. It's your fault, Kev. It's your fault. All right, shout-outs for the week. Jimmy, you're up first.
Just thanks to my group of friends who played my placement with me on my placement matches last night. We had a lot of fun, a lot of close games, a lot of salt, but it was a lot of fun, which is what's important. And everyone for supporting the show. That's pretty much it for me this week. Awesome.
All right, I'm going to do my shout outs, and then Kevin will let you do your shout outs at the end. How's that sound? Look at me being so nice and sharing. I was learned to share in preschool, stuck with me the rest of my life. As for me, streaming over at twitch.tv/kickedtripod, got some cool things in the works for 2017, including a new Hearthstone show, Inside Hearthstone, going to be coming second half January, where we go and myself and Ray and other guest pro players and people in the Hearthstone scene kind of take 10 minutes into like a weekly lesson or talk about something cool or taking a key moment from a tournament, really breaking it down. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be called Inside Hearthstone. It'll be there shortly. I'll have more information for you as we get closer to the time, but I'm really excited about a little YouTube show. Should be fun. All right, Kevin, go ahead. Your last goodbyes.
Last goodbyes. Well, guys, Jimmy, John, Rosh, in absentia, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for everything. To those of you listening, make sure you stick with the show and keep supporting these guys, because what they're doing is awesome, and I trust them to do great, if not better, work without me. If you want to stay in touch, track me down. You can follow me on Twitter @lackofrealism. I'm sure I'll still be engaging in the conversation and keeping up with everybody. This has been a lot of fun. And I wouldn't want to change it. I wouldn't want to go back and do it differently. So I just hope that everybody has had a great time, have enjoyed our first 50 episodes, and that the next 50 are even better. So one last time, thank you and goodbye.
Bye, Kevin. All right. Well, that was sweet. I hope you guys enjoyed episode number 50 of The Payload. You can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzpro.com. And a big thank you to Lenovo Gaming for partnering with us to bring you these last couple episodes. Thank you to Jake Buttono at jakebuttono.ca for music. And of course, follow us on Twitter at Payload Podcast, on Facebook at Payload Podcast, on Patreon at Payload Podcast, and send us your emails to thepayload@blizzpro.com. We do thoroughly enjoy your iTunes reviews, and you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcast. This has been episode 50. Goodbye, everybody. And again, Kevin, goodbye. Miss you. We love you. You'll be here in spirit. I'll make sure to tell people when they're not wrong for you, and it'll be great. All right. Well, thanks, guys, and stay tuned. Right after this show, we're going to take a quick break. I want to play some Maze Snowball Offensive. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. And for those of you listening on audio, see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.
Happy holidays, guys. Jimmy, you missed it. So disappointed.
I totally missed it. I'm so sorry.